case, I know that I got very, very comfortable in asking the questions, picking everything apart, mm-hmm. figuring it out, and looking at the facts and just discussing, did you see that or not see that?
I would follow verbatim, you know, the mm-hmm. form. I would follow it, and I would ask every single question. Mm-hmm. And then the motion that I made would say that, you know, pursuant to the evidence that I've heard and conclusions in law and findings of fact, I do not believe that it warrants a variance because of A, B, C, D, or I do believe that it does. And then have entered into the minutes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of that into there. Because I have seen people say, I move that we approve it. You know, why? You know, what findings of fact? Well, it, you know, I think they met all the requirements. What are the requirements? You've got to state them. It's got to be. Otherwise, it goes to review before the Superior Court, and they look for the basis for your decision, and the decision says, I think that they made a good argument. They're looking at the transcript. You're not there to do that. They're looking at the transcript. So you've got to give them something to appeal from and something to support you. So, are your minutes doing a good job of doing that?
Yes.
Good. Oh, yeah.
When we deliberate, we actually do question, go through that question.
Go through that question.
Everybody answers that question, and good. We say, okay, good. It was four-fifths there, and we move on to the next.
And it's not unusual to have people vote on each one of those five.
Yeah, we
exactly
do that.
How we do that.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's why you should never be gone.
That's right. That's good. But that's good to do. And you also need your initial vote needs to be on whether or not you think the application is complete.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't think it's complete, you can stop it right there and turn it back, and they have to go back and fill out, and make it more complete. And if they say, well, I don't understand, what does that mean? You need to talk with the building inspector. And I know that may be your enemy, but and it may not be unusual in a small town, okay, for the chairman or someone to go and accompany there, so they think they've got someone that's listening that might be a neutral party. It's a small town. You can do things like that. So, the bottom line is that you want to be fair and impartial in your decision making, and it's not the town versus anybody who wants to build or develop or whatever. It's just doing what's right by the ordinance and doing what's fair. So it's important. You can postpone your decisions, but you can't postpone them for an indefinite period of time. There has to be a reasonableness. We're entitled to a fair and speedy trial in this country, and it's supposed to be not 6 months from now. It's supposed to be nice if it was the night that you gave your testimony. But if for whatever reason it's given late or whatever and you need to postpone it, then what you do is you recess until you can reconvene. But you don't adjourn if you're still holding a case up and you need to recess. You can't adjourn that meeting until you finished with that decision on that.
Who do you normally see as the people that would be filing these applications? It would be the landowner / homeowner? Is it a developer or is it a general contractor or pretty much?
You know, the whole myriad of those. But the party that's seeking, the variance especially, should be the one who the variance will affect. I mean, they can have an agent there speaking on their behalf, mm-hmm. I think it would serve them well to be able to be there to answer personally questions about how it is a unique circumstance for them and to be able to answer specifically. Otherwise, the agent may or may not do that for them. And so usually it's the applicant is the person that owns the property. Mm-hmm. And they oftentimes will have an attorney with them. If it's real important. Developers may come because they want to change something in their development, but I can tell you in most cases where there is a developer coming for a variance, it's because they have a conditional use permit or some type of a permit and they found out that they may have agreed to it too quick because now they're boxed in and they can't do exactly what they wanted to. And I don't think it rises to the level of a variance. In fact, you have to be cautious in that circumstance because you may even be offering a use variance, and that in itself is illegal. So it would be hard to say I've got 5-acre tract of land and I've got this unique circumstance that keeps me from being able to use it the way I wanted to. Well, gee, you got 5 acres, you can put X number of units per acre on there, figure it out, you know. So
most of the cases it would be here would be on parcel, the small tracts of land.
It would be. And a lot of them are setback kind of variances and stuff like that. A setback variance is not a use variance. That's a, if indeed, you know, and I came from up in the mountains, okay, people would buy a piece of property and they start digging the footers, and 6 inches below the dirt was this boulder that goes from here to China. And there's no way that they can, I mean, so they need to shift the building over a little bit because of this huge boulder that was there, and blasting that boulder would rattle everybody's house and cause damage to everyone else, and all the neighbors are fine with it, then that's a good case for where you might could offset the setback just enough to dodge the rock so that you can get in there. But you'd have to prove that there's not any other way to do it, you know, i.e. drilling the rock or doing whatever. We don't have the rocks here like that, but if you found a place that was really, really wet and wouldn't support a footer, or something like that happened, and you may need to shift it one way or the other. In places where you got septic tanks instead of sewer, sometimes the septic tank has to be placed exactly where you were going to put the house. And now, if you put the septic tank there and stay within the footprint offered, you can't use the property for what it was properly zoned for. That's an exception, you know, unique circumstance. It's, once again, it's judgment, human judgment. That's why you have the Board of Adjustments that are just feeding it into a computer and it spits out and says yes or no. Because there are extenuating circumstances. I would encourage you to always be thinking in terms of, you know, okay, why are they here? And is it really a legitimate, and thinking through your process, you know, and you want to try to accommodate people, but at the same time, you want to make sure you're protecting the ordinance. And remember at all times that for that one person that's there, there's an entire town that's not there that's expecting you to protect their interest. And so in making your decisions, and oftentimes the only people that come to a hearing are the ones that are opposed to something. So there's a whole lot of other people out there that may feel another way. We mentioned the open meetings law. I noticed in your rules of procedure, I'm glad to see that, if a person was not there for the public hearing or for the hearing on it, and it's been postponed, and then you reconvene, and you got members that weren't there, but they are there now, they're not allowed to participate in that vote. That's a fair thing to do. The law actually is silent on it. It doesn't say that they have to have been there to have voted on it. But if I were an applicant, I would really feel like I was being done wrong, especially if the deciding vote was cast by somebody who was not even there. I'd have to feel like there was something going on with that one. Has that happened before? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
No, thank God.
It's a smelly can of sardines.
Oh, yeah. You guarantee that one's going to be appealed. Rules of procedure and apply them consistently. We talked about that. You act in a quasi-judicial capacity, similar to a court of law with rules for procedure, hearing a sworn testimony, deliberations that ultimately lead to findings of fact, and conflicts of interest. See the page, the second to the end, on that handout that I gave you. And your rules of procedure, by the way, address that. I was very pleased to see that was in there. But the second to the last page, you see the brown, and it's got a it's E, section E, actually E1, I think that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And your rules of procedure restate exactly verbatim that it's real important to understand that a person has a right to a fair and impartial decision maker. That means that you can't have a conflict that would result in the person having a fixed opinion prior to the hearing, or that they've already made up their mind and have stated such, or an undisclosed ex parte communication, in other words, chit-chat beforehand, you know, before you get there. Yeah, I read that case, I agree with you, I think they ought to, you know, you don't do that. or if they have a financial interest in the outcome of the matter. This is the one that really, really makes it tough in a small beach town. A close familiar, business, or other associational relationship with the affected person. In a small town like Curie Beach, it's going to be very difficult not to have at least an associational relationship. Yeah, I see them, they go to church with me. I see them at the grocery store. They're a member of the club, you know. But according to the letter of the law, if that is a fact, then you need to recuse yourself from voting. Now, what does that do to your 4/5 majority? I note that a quorum under your rules of procedure is 3. But for voting on matters of a variance and a few others, it's required that you have a 4/5. The state law has entered into this and decided that in the case of determining a 4/5 quorum, that if someone has been recused, then that number does not need to be used to add in to make. So if you got 4 people, if you got 5 people there, got a full board that night, 2 of them are recused legitimately because they have an associational relationship or other. You can't have a 4/5 then because of that. So therefore, the law has said in determining a 4/5 vote, in that case, you don't have to count the ones that were recused. So you do.
So you can do a 2/3.
Four fifths of the 2/3. Yeah, go figure.
So you do a 2/3.
You can do a 2/3.
Okay.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, you end up with, if you have less than 4, what you have is a majority of those present.
Mm-hmm.
If you get down to just
2/3 is less than 4/5. So is that
understanding that it is less than that, but because you're not allowed
to figure that out.
The presumption, college working.
The presumption is if you use purely fractions, the presumption is that you started with a fixed amount and you can't reduce that amount.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to determine the quorum, in the event someone's been recused, you subtract them from the total and you start with whatever you've got.
That's so not 4/5 of what meant. Is what.
That's right. It's what you got there. Yeah. If you got 4, then you can have 4/5. But if a guy's been recused and you've only got 3, obviously you can't have 4/5. So you then go with a majority of what you got. And if you get down to just 3 people, 2/3 will do it. So it's not the mathematical equation. It's the fact that you don't count those people. And also, if you have alternates, because you have to include your alternates. If you got an alternate, then you need to throw them into the mix. And let them be one of the voting members. If someone's recused, you pull the alternate in. When you run out of alternates and you still only have 3, then you go with the majority. But you have to make every effort to achieve the 4/5 by adding your alternates and everything. But when you get to that point, and someone can't be recused because, well, gee, I'm playing golf with that guy tomorrow. I want him to hate me. I'm sorry. That's not necessarily, I know that's an associational of such, but really and truly, the intent of the conflict of interest is that will it butter your bread if you make this decision? You know, is there at the top of the list is a financial interest. Obviously, you're going to benefit from this somehow. But if your associational relationship would make you prejudiced in your decision, then you really shouldn't be making that. You need to back away from it because, you know, we're buddies. We hang out and, that's going to affect my decision. You know, you're probably right to recruit yourself. You're just playing golf, or you just happen to know the guy, or the one I really like is, he's a customer of mine. maybe if that's going to be an issue, maybe you don't need to be on the Board of Adjustment. Because, you know what, small town, you're going to know the applicants 9 times out of 10. And it's just a matter of ethics. You have to decide at what point do you think that it will affect your judgment or not. And the board needs to be self-policing on that as well. If you know for a fact that, hey, this guy's, he's got a business relationship with this guy, you can recuse them. The chairman has to sort of watch out for that, I think. I beat that up a lot because that's a huge, huge part of the new laws. It used to say financial interest and that was it. But when it expanded that to the associational interest, it makes it tough on the small towns. I can't say that the new law in 2005 was written in the favor of the citizens. I think it was written in the favor of developers. But Because clearly, the developer is looking at an opportunity to get rid of somebody that might vote opposing. They can try to find that thread to grab hold and say, hey, that guy's got a bone to pick with me, you know, and get him recused until they get the number they need to get there. So.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Say example that you had a builder or developer there, and we got a beef, and he brought the application before, and he realized that I'm a general contractor. Would that be a conflict of interest?
They could probably build a case to say that since you compete with him, and all builders.
Well,
I guess
I'm a general contractor, you know, but that doesn't mean that I have not in this state. I mean, another state, but I do carry different licenses, mechanical licenses in North Carolina. Yeah. I'm a general contractor in Alabama and Georgia, but I'm a general contractor. Sometimes people say, "Well, you're a general contractor. You know what I'm talking about."
No. If you would be in a situation where you would be competing with him for customers and clients in the same jurisdiction, then clearly you have a perceived conflict, whether it's real or not, it's perceived.
Right.
The fact that you are in that trade, but you do it elsewhere, and you're not likely to be competing with him, I think you'd be fairly safe. And I think ultimately, too, you want to ask yourself that question. You know, would I be ruling fair and impartial? And you know, there's lots of questions that one can ask themselves about all of that, because, you know, at the end of the day, once again, why we don't have a computer but we have people, is because you want a human being making that decision. And sometimes that human prejudice might be what is needed to look on the human side of something and make a decision. So,
I don't see it being an issue. I just see it be an association. I'm one of them, but not...
One may bring it up, you just need to be prepared to answer it. And and I think the first question that I would ask if I were the chair is say, you know, I know that that may be a question someone would have. Do you yourself feel like that that's a conflict? And your answer that you just gave me would satisfy me that, no, it's not. You ask the person that's out there applying, they'll say, I don't know, I'll let you know when I see how he votes. <You know? laughs> So it could go either way. Like, that guy's a contractor, he knows how hard I've got it. You know, he might be on my side. Like picking a jury, you know? I mean, well, what,
sure,
you know?
It's sure, it's, but, you know, we're also tethered by different laws and requirements that we have to be on the up and up also.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
And I understand that, too, but I'm just trying to understand where the thinking could be, but and who knows? I know this guy. I mean, he's my neighbor. It's like, you know, they're neighbors. They talk. You know?
Well, and I tell you, I think that's a legitimate associational relationship is neighbors, and it can either be positive or negative. You know, what kind of neighbor they are?
Well,
they got a barking dog. You know,
in the whole town. So
you're
lucky.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You're a little town, especially in the winter. My gracious, you know everybody here. You know, I mean, you at least have seen them. So there's going to be some of that. It's just trying to make sure that it's a fair and impartial decision that's being made, that's not influenced by some external, you know. So it's tough. And it's not an easy board to be on because of that.
No, you know, it's a business. But, you know, again, as a contractor, I'm bound by certain laws and regulations that I can't do certain things, and so I can't talk or discuss or have a financial gain if somebody else's, such as bid rigging. You can't
that's
do
right.
those things.
Yeah, of course you don't. And that's and those are your own, you know, professional and personal ethics, you know, that govern that.
Yeah, 99% of what we hear is a homeowner.
True.
Coming forward saying, I want to put a shed beside my house, and all sheds up in the backyard. Yeah. You know, that's what they. We don't. I don't believe we've ever really had a contractor.
We
did.
Giving evidence with that 35-foot height limit question.
Right.
That's
a use variance, and no, there's no way anybody can convince me that the height of the building requires a special exception as a variance. So,
right. I forgot about that.
It's all to do with the definition of what the height was and.
What a parapet wall was when we got to all those.
Yeah,
and that's where you as a contractor would be most valuable to us, is you already know what these definitions are, and you can help us with that.
Yeah. In our discussions.
In our discussions.
And then we stay talking about it.
But you know, when someone says that the structural integrity of my building is going to be damaged if I'm not allowed to place it right here, this guy knows how to build buildings. He's going to be saying, "Whoa, I don't know about that. That doesn't make sense." I mean, that, you know, where you place it, what other factors are involved in that. So bringing your special area of expertise into the discussion is a good thing, because not all of us know about that. Digging footers, you know, I don't know how deep the footers have to be here in this area. I know in colder climates they have to be 3 feet. You know, here they might be 1 foot. I don't know. Or do they have to build them with a little pad out or something? You know, those are little things that would be helpful to know. And, of course, your building inspector is going to help you with that as well. Your building inspector's job is difficult, but that is your front line, your first line of defense for the ordinance. And their job is to hear the stuff first and to give them their opinion as a building inspector of whether they think that it is warrants a variance or not. And they should follow those same little questions down through there whenever they're doing that. And whenever, I don't know whether John does that, but whenever I would present cases to my board of adjustment, I would have already filled out all of those things. That would have already been in the application, or the applicant would have already filled it out. But I would have my thoughts on any of that, that I would, because I felt like they would rely on my professional testimony with regards to that. Certainly, if they were appealing my decision, I would definitely have a statement about, you know, my point of view. You know, this is my side. This is why I think that. It's just like going to court. You know, I arrested this guy because I saw him doing whatever. They get their chance to refute that, but I'm going to give my side and give my statement. And that's what you should want from John, too, is that he would provide that for you. And most likely does, because he's a straight shooter. So, but that's kind of it in the nutshell. It's, you know, that, and that was quick. And what I intended to do by being quick on that was to maybe raise questions and some of the questions that have come out. And we're at that point now where I think I've gone over most of the overview of it. It's like drinking from a fire hose, because it gave you a lot of stuff quickly. But it's now time to ask the questions.
We at one time had tried to be the friendly board, and it kind of backfired on us a little bit. Where somebody would bring something to us, and they'd present the plan. This is what we'd like to build. And we said, well, if you alter it just this little bit, you know, we wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to do that, or do we just say the plan you brought to us is no variance?
My opinion is that's what makes a small town a nice place to live. I think you got to be careful in advising an applicant, and there's a magic line that you go there. But if it's clearly, you know, you can tell, you know, if you're being shystered or whether someone's got a legitimate and they haven't thought about that. And if you see a way that will serve the citizens of the town, preserve the spirit and intent of the ordinance, and help the applicant, I think it's okay to give them some advice on that.
On the record or off the record?
Oh, I would do it on the record. I definitely wouldn't. But now, when I say advice, I'm not talking about giving them advice that's outside of your professional capacity, like, you know, you ought to build using this material or you ought to use that.
No. Yeah. An example, we're pretty went there together on a team.
Yeah.
But it's like when we had someone coming in trying to tell us something about an ADA, and the information that they were giving us was a little incorrect, or a lot of it incorrect.
Right.
And considering that I was on the board of the ADA, I was able to bring forth information to our group and just say, you know, this person is asking this, this, this. These are really the measurements that are allowed according to the building code, blah, 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 blah. And
that must
we
have been
could...
About it had to have been about a
It was a set of steps.
It was stairs.
Okay.
Stairs and stuff like that. And
they wanted a wider set of steps. And what
that
actually, what they wanted was to extend their deck out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, see, that's
figured that out pretty quick.
Yeah.
They wanted to extend their deck out.
And you know what my advice to them would be? You know, this is where I would give them advice. Say, you know, I'm just looking at this thing. I believe if you would just not put your deck out that far,
that's exactly
you probably
would
be able to get this without having to go through all of this.
We said 2 inches this way, and then you still fit the requirement. Yeah, yeah. We did it.
Just don't build as big of a deck. You know, I mean, that's a, you know, there's nothing wrong with giving that advice.
That's where our general contractor over here could actually draw up a design and say, look, this is what you're talking about.
That's right. That's right.
As long as he doesn't say, I'll build it for you. Yeah.
Do you usually have a legal representation whenever people are bringing it to him? Oh, you're the lawyer? Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm
glad I didn't say anything bad about lawyers. Well, have I said anything that
we would have defended his virtue, don't we?
Yeah, but I mean, that's a legal expert here, because I'm not licensed to practice law, but I'm just, you know, from my experience, these are things. So as far as the rules of evidence, I tell you what I'd love, because I'm gonna run this one aground. I've got to figure it out. Is that idea about sworn or not sworn? Because I know in court, obviously, it all has to be sworn testimony. It has to be admissible evidence. But in your rules of procedure, it has that one part in there where it says that you could also consider unsworn testimony. And I don't know about that. That bothered me when I read that, because I just don't know.
I've always heard or taken the position that since it's quasi-judicial, that you can accept unsworn testimony, but I mean, just as you said, you don't have to to accept it. You can take it. I always tell them, take it for what it's worth. You can't, if it's a letter that's not even notarized, you can't cross-examine it.
Mm-hmm.
So
see,
it
that's
probably
the key.
Is not a warrant.
Hearsay, we don't accept hearsay because we can't cross-examine it. We don't accept someone comes in with a packet of pictures. Thank you for taking the time. We know it cost you money, but basically we don't consider that information because it wasn't part of the original.
Yeah,
it's not notarized.
That's my thought, is that if I were the applicant, or if I were the aggrieved party, one way or the other, maybe I don't agree with the decision that y'all made, and I'm thinking you're considering evidence and nobody's had the opportunity to put them to the test on that evidence. You know, to ask the hard questions of, you know, by the way, what day of the week did you take that picture? Oh, it was on Thursday. Interesting. It shows a sunny day. It was raining, according to me, that day. You know, I mean, that's, you know, it'd be nice to be able to ask questions that would totally change your mind about something. And so,
well, we've had people that come with us with petitions and so forth, and we say thank you very much for taking the time to get them, but we can't consider that.
And we won't.
Yeah. I'm convinced that the law, even though it may or may not, I think it may be somewhat silent on that. I don't think that you would be in a position where you would be in trouble because you did not accept that. I think what it's saying is that perhaps if you want to, you can. But I think you'd be taking good advice from your attorney if you decide you only take it when it's sworn. Because
or just make it clear maybe that you're not giving it much weight because you can't cross-examine it. You know. Yeah, I'd hate to have a whole case hinging on something like that, for sure.
And it would be hard for you to defend the town's actions if it were based on something like that. That would be, that's just not real solid conclusions at law. Sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I did find that interesting regarding the testimony of a court official, of an attorney or for another court official that... you know, you have to advise them up front that you can't necessarily use what they have to say as part of deciding the case because it was not sworn. And that Mike Bro, who's retired now, was the one that came up with that opinion based on case law. So I don't know.
The procedures that we pretty much have are prior to beginning. Harry will ask, "Is there anybody who wants to be sworn in?"
Yes.
I mean, so. Mm-hmm. You know, he's law enforcement, I'm former child welfare, who's used to dealing with law enforcement.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So,
court officials, so you understand, yeah.
Totally. And he is hired. And he is our builder.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's...
Contractor.
You're being...
Pardon me.
You folks are a jury of peers, okay? I mean, that's what you are. You're actually, you know... You can't ask for any better than that. You know, you're coming to a group of people here who represent all walks of life, who live in the same town that you do, and to your knowledge, don't have a bone to pick with you, who will honestly and fairly listen to your case. And that's all you can ask. Mm-hmm. And And for each of you testing yourselves, that's all that you can seek, is to make sure that you do your very best to be fair and impartial. Don't get sucked into talking about cases beforehand. And if you think that you perceive that, if you have, or if there is a perceived conflict, bring it up ahead of time. Let everybody bat it around, and you know, ultimately the board has to vote to recuse someone. Just do your best. Use the golden rule. How would you want to be treated if you were coming before this board, and try to do your duty that way? And I think it always works best. And follow the legal guidelines. And those forms that are in the back of this book are just absolutely marvelous. I don't know which ones that you use, but when I had an opportunity to use forms that were prepared by the school of government, I threw mine out and started using theirs, because it just, heck, they've been batted around and tested forever and forever, and that just makes good sense to me. Mm-hmm. So, any other questions? And if you have questions later, you got my information so that you can call me, because you may go home and read through that stuff and say, wait a minute. Huh? Yeah. And the same for you as well. Please call. So.
I have no question right now.
No.
No. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
We appreciate it.
You know, I miss the days of being just a manager and zoning enforcement officer and all of that. And then there's other days when I'm sure glad I'm not doing that. And what I like the most about Curie Beach is they're like my grandchildren here. I can come in and talk to them, and I give them advice, and then I can grab my bag and go.
Tell me, what about that present you were supposed to be bringing?
That's exactly right. That's a good one. Barry heard me say that one before.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We always welcome some decent training here. Do I hear a motion to adjourn our session?
I make a motion to adjourn our session.
I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, aye, aye. Thank you.
We're adjourned.
And I hope we haven't scared you away from the Board of Adjustments.
I realize you've been in Board of Adjustments for a long time.
Thank you so much for this. It's still in the box. I know it's warm. So
no, you haven't eaten it yet.
No. I didn't want to be rude and do that in front of them.
Yeah, I went back to some of them.
Well, there's a microwave in there if you want to use it.
And I think I was 2007.
This will be great. This will be going before I get off the island.
Yeah, it wasn't shortly after me.
That's right.
Well, good. If it's not a case that's here at Curie Beach.